Hello, good morning everybody, 9 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. We are the one, 95.1 FM, and of course, almost 50 years, KYMN AM, 1080 on your dial, a friend you can count on. Well, let's get right into the show, but first of all, how did your weekend go? I hope yours went well. My weekend started on Thursday when I had an opportunity to jump in a boat and really have a good time catching a lot of fish on the river, the St. Croix River between Hudson and Stillwater. Yeah, I'm still talking about it. It was very exciting. Started at 8 o'clock, went till about 5:30, but it was around 3 o'clock when we started really catching fish. I had caught a big widemouth, or they called it a flat mouth catfish, had to weigh well over 20 pounds, and I got it on the bottom of the St. Croix River and had a lot of line out, and it took forever to get that in. Ah, yeah, that's what I did on Thursday, and don't forget Saturday, another great day in Northfield, and on Sunday, went to the Montgomery Kalachi Days, and we had a really great time. The ambassadors went there representing Northfield and, of course, the defeated Jesse James Days, and they had a really great time, and a lot of people, thousands, saw, hey, come to Northfield for the defeated Jesse James Days. That's right around the corner, and I'm going to have the candidates who want to become ambassadors and represent Northfield. I'll have them on the air next Thursday, or this coming Thursday, I should say. And then on Friday, the hour portion of the Wayne Eddy Affair, I will have the three young ladies that were ambassadors for the past year, and find out what their plans are, where they're going to go, what they're going to do, and what they learned as an ambassador for Northfield through the defeat of Jesse James Days. But right now, I have a gentleman in studio, and his name is John Marks, and he is the executive director of the Goodhue County Habitat for Humanity. And he said, why do you want me on? There's one in Rice County. I said, well, every day I do a show, and I'd like to talk to a lot of people. So, John, I want to thank you very much for stopping by. Good morning.
Well, thanks, Wayne. Thanks for having me, and it's really a pleasure to be here. I love Northfield.
And where do you live?
Actually, I'm a cheesehead. I live in Wisconsin.
You do?
I do. I live in a little town called El Paso.
I have never heard of that.
No, many people have not. We always joke that it's probably the last stop that the conquistadors made on their way to, you know, they were searching for the Fountain of Youth up there on the Mississippi River. They got to El Paso, turned around, and went home.
Okay, now, I know 35.
Okay, Wisconsin 35.
Yep, and I want to know, is it a long
35? No, we're actually about, maybe 15 miles from 35. If you drew a line between Ellsworth, Wisconsin, and Spring Valley, Wisconsin, it would go right through El Paso. It's right along the Rush River, and we moved there back in 2013.
Is it on some water?
No, actually, we have just a small acreage up on top of a hill. We have a really nice view into the Rush River. I'm a trout fisherman, so that kind of drew me in to live close to the river. I drive over it every day when I go to work. I wish I could fish it every day. But
where's your place of work?
I actually work in Red Wing. That's my office is in Red Wing.
Okay, for Goodhue County.
For Goodhue County, okay. Habitat for Humanity.
Well, how long does it take you to get to work?
Oh, 25 minutes. Oh. It's a short drive.
And a pretty drive.
It's beautiful. It's all country roads, so except for the last couple miles over 63.
One thing that I've always been amazed about is the country roads in Wisconsin off of when you start going east of 35,
mm-hmm.
and they're all just beautifully paved,
right?
And they're windy,
yep.
and they climb up over the coulees
yep.
and go down.
It's beautiful
and
country.
For motorcyclists, it's just a lot of fun.
It's funny that you mention that, because I am a motorcyclist.
Uh-oh.
Yep, and I actually have a motorcycle that's designed to be ridden on-road and off-road.
Okay.
So we go out in search of the gravel,
yeah.
and oddly enough, you have to look pretty hard to find gravel. You're absolutely right. It's a lot of the roads are paved.
What are you riding?
It's a BMW GS.
BMW GS,
yeah, it's a
built for off-road?
Yeah, it's a 1,200cc motorcycle.
Oh, my gosh, that's a lot.
It's a lot of motorcycle to be riding on a gravel road.
Yeah.
I've even ridden it on ATV trails where it's legal. The big problem with the GS is if you tip it over, you better have somebody there to help you pick it back up,
because well,
it's heavy.
I would think if wet, it would be over 700 pounds.
It's close to that, 650, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big motorcycle, but it's set up with, you know, these hard cases so you can pack it full of gear. I actually have a trip planned probably over Labor Day. We're going to go away, my son and I. Actually, both of my sons. I have twin boys, so that we're all going to get together and go for a long ride.
And how long would be long? Are you going to go down to Missouri or
no,
something?
I think, you know, we haven't even figured it all out yet, but I think we're looking at probably 4 or 5 days. And I'm kind of inclined to head up towards the North Shore.
Oh, okay.
I kind of wanted to head all the way to Nipigon, Canada, but one of my boys doesn't have a passport yet, so.
You know, I was, my wife and I usually vacation in October.
Uh-huh. Great month to be gone.
And we went up to, I don't know why we chose it, but we went up to Duluth.
Mm-hmm.
And then we crossed over to Superior.
Yep.
And then we went to, well, I can't name things, but like the middle of the state.
Okay.
And then started going south.
Okay.
And the road, the trees were almost on the road.
Oh, right.
And they were covered in gorgeous colors.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just like, wow, this is fantastic. You're right in the trees. It's
yep.
not like a freeway or anything.
Right.
And we took that and we just went right straight down. And
mm-hmm.
I think we ended up going over to La Crosse.
Okay.
And it is a beautiful time to bike.
Yep.
As long as
you were on a motorcycle at that time?
Yeah.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And
so what do you ride?
I ride a Honda.
Okay. A Goldwing?
A Goldwing.
Okay.
2000.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 1500.
That's a big bike.
And I made it, had it, it's a trike,
three okay.
wheels. And my license number is 34FUN. And some people don't get that. But
I get that.
And so we travel on that, and it's very, very comfortable.
I'll bet.
And
it's got to be like driving your living room couch down the road, isn't
you know,
it?
You know, I was just going to say, my wife on the back has the opportunity to view.
Sure.
And I have described it as, you know, imagine being in your leisure chair.
Right, driving down the highway.
And laid back. She even reads books, you
oh
know.
Oh, my.
It's just a wonderful way to
yeah.
spend
time. Well, you have
time.
To love the outdoors, right?
Yeah.
And I think you do, obviously.
And we get caught in what would be a tornado that you don't know it was until the next morning.
Oh, wow.
And I had a takeoff of, I think we might have been in Iowa, and we just looked for a barn.
Hmm.
And there's a barn with the doors open. We zipped in there.
Oh, my.
And stayed, and then went and knocked on the doors when everything was over
yeah.
with, and nobody was home.
Oh, my.
But we wanted to say it was us that was there in case they saw us.
Sure.
But anyhow, I'm glad to hear that we have something in common
we
already.
We definitely do.
So we want to talk a little bit about the Habitat for Humanity, and then I want to get into your life, all right?
Sounds good.
Our guest is John Parkes, and that's spelled P-A-R-K-E-S.
That's correct.
And how many say Parkes?
Not very often.
Okay.
Not very often.
All right. Now, your office in Red Wing is to build a Habitat for Humanity in Goodhue County.
That's right.
And I remember when that project first started, a fellow by the name of Larry Anthony from Dundas asked if I wanted to participate in that.
Okay.
And they were building, I think, one in Dundas. And I had no idea what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started seeing former President Jimmy Carter get involved in that.
Right.
And I'm not a fixer. I can't do anything.
Okay.
And so I could use at that time the power of radio to let people know who would be available and all that. And then
a great service.
I had a young lady here in town, a single mother, and she was selected. So they built a home for her.
Wonderful.
And she's so appreciative that they had an opportunity to get a house and take care of it financially. So how did you get involved in this?
Boy, I have to go way back to 1996, Wayne. I was a residential home builder at the time, and I had my own business, and I'd been at it probably a little over a decade at that point. And my sons were, I have twin boys, and they had both moved. You know, they were post graduation from high school. And I told my wife, you know what, I just want to take a break and do something different. You know, I had my own business, so, you know, I basically wanted to shut down in the winter of 96 for a couple of months. And she had a job where she could get a leave of absence. So we decided to do what's called a Global Village Mission Project. And that is a program where they pull people together from all over the country, and they'll go to a foreign country and build a home in that country. So that particular trip, we went to Guatemala. And I just finished building a large house in Hudson. It was a beautiful home. And what really struck me when I got to Guatemala was that the amount of money that we had spent on the front door of that house in Hudson equaled the amount of money it cost to build a home in Guatemala. So it was about $2,500 for their front door, and for that we could build an entire home for someone in Guatemala. So there was a group of 12 of us, I believe, and we had a wonderful experience there. There's something different about going to a country and getting immersed and not being a tourist. You end up seeing things that you would never see as a tourist, and that was true for us. So we stayed on after the mission project, and we traveled in the country for another 2 weeks. And when I came home, I was just really deeply affected by the whole experience. And I, you know, as a builder, I thought, you know, I have the skills. I could use my talents towards creating affordable housing here in the States as well. And I kind of, you know, made a promise to myself that someday I would work for Habitat for Humanity. And you have to fast forward almost 20 years. It was actually 18 years before that promise came true, but it did. I'd been through the recession in 2009. I was, at that point, I'd folded my business and I was working for another builder. But we could see on the horizon the work was coming to an end. A lot of our work was heavily designed, and it took like a year sometimes to get a project going. So we knew that the project was coming to an end, or the work was coming to an end, and we all got laid off. And I can remember it very vividly. The last day that I worked was the day that President Obama was inaugurated. I can remember hearing that. His speech, you know, while I was doing my last day of work.
Yeah, in January, yeah.
Right. And I kind of bounced around from there for a while. But eventually I found this job opportunity in Goodhue County. And it was a part-time job. And I was working full-time at that point for another company doing software support and training. But I found this job in Goodhue County, and I went and applied for it, and I really hit it off with the director. He hired me as a construction and outreach coordinator. And I joke with people sometimes. They say, construction and outreach coordinator, what is that? I said, well, basically they were looking for a carpenter that could speak in complete sentences. So,
okay.
So I guess I fit the bill.
Now, when you were doing that before you went to Red Wing for that job, mm-hmm. were you a hammer and saw guy, or were you an inspector type guy?
No. Well, as a general contractor, you know, you end up wearing a lot of hats, which is not unfamiliar now. You know, what I learned the deeper I got into my business was that the less time I spent actually laboring, the more successful my business could be. But it was really hard for me to just put my tool belt away. So I would go out to the job every day and make sure the guys were, you know, well supplied and all the equipment was running, and we hammered out any of the details. But yeah, I mean, the first 10 years, I mean, I was the labor force and the bidding guy and the books guy and everything. So, but you know, eventually I got to the point where I had 6 carpenters working for me. And at that point, if I had probably just put my tool belt in a closet and let it go and just focused on making the business run better, I probably would, who knows, I may never have ended up with Habitat. So, but there's, you know, God has a funny way of bringing you where you're supposed to be. You know, it just took a while.
With that global unit that you had your first experience, mm-hmm. was that a religious operation?
Well, you know, Habitat for Humanity is a Christian organization.
I didn't know that.
Yes, it is. It's founded on Christian principles. And, you know, I'm a Christian. And so what I really found was, and it became even more clear once I got into the job, was that it really lined up my values and my skills in one nice package. And, you know, we've subsequently hired people into our organization, and I tell them now, you have to get used to this, but, you know, we pray at board meetings, you know. We pray before we eat, you know, when we have gatherings. And it's, you know, it's somewhat unexpected. I mean, if you work for a church, that's normal, but there's not a lot of Christian organizations out there that really practice that, you know, on a daily basis. So we try and bring God right into the mix every day.
So the people that are lucky enough to be chosen, do they generally have a Christian belief and express it?
It's not required. We certainly encourage that because we believe that, you know, part of the package of being a Christian is you get community. That should be, you know, that should be in the mix, right? And we believe that community is a real strong element to success for anyone. But no, we don't, you know, it's not a requirement. We don't screen people for their, you know, they don't sign a statement of faith. And likewise, on our build sites, when we have volunteers come out, they also don't need to make a faith statement. You know, we take anyone that shows up to work.
Speaking about to work, there are people over at the QB, the quarterback club here in Northfield, mm-hmm. which has been around for almost 50 years, if not wow. already 50 years, and it's locally owned and locally managed, and we're talking about the quarterback club, the QB, and they serve breakfast until 10 o'clock every single morning, except Sunday, so people can go to the nonprofit specials. For example, last Sunday, the Defeated Jesse James Day's ambassadors put on a pancake feed almost right across the street from the quarterback club, and it was very successful, and it goes towards the program and scholarships. The quarterback club has luncheon and dinner specials. Now, on Monday, they have a 4-piece dark chicken dinner for just $7.95, and with that, you get 2 sides, and you can choose from beans and french fries and mashed potatoes and coleslaw. And their other special is a barbecued pork sandwich with large fries for only $6.95. Very reasonable, locally owned, locally managed. We're talking about the Quarterback Club right here in Northfield on Highway 3 and 3rd Street.
Are you
already
looking
hungry
for spacious senior living in Northfield? Feel at home at Northfield Retirement Communities, Northwood Pines. Available for individuals and couples, this assisted living combines the privacy of one-bedroom plus den apartments with family-style meals and care available around the clock. Visit us online at northfieldretirement.org or call us today at 664-3466. Northfield Retirement Community. Innovation. Choice. Tradition.
The Dakota County Fair is one of the biggest fairs in the state, and it's in your own backyard. This year, visit the Mobile 9/11 exhibit and see Freddie Justice, the planet's funniest hypnotist. There's live music, demolition derbies, 4-H displays, and a gigantic midway. Plus, your chance to win big at our new 7 Keys, 7 Days grand prize giveaway. See you at the Dakota County Fair in Farmington, August 6th through the 12th.
We're teasing now with the number one song in all of 1974, the year my guest got out of high school. Can you name this tune?
Oh, Wayne, that's an easy one. I actually play this on piano myself. This is The Way We Were, and that's Barbara Streisand singing it.
You got it. Number one in all of 1974 on Billboard's Top 100. It is 9:23 on the Wayne Eddy Affair. What a glorious morning. Plenty of sunshine, nice and cool, and I still marvel at the hanging flowers that they have on the lamppost in Northfield. I watch them every day. They seem to just grow more and more. They're halfway to the street almost. It's amazing. Our guest this morning, John Parks, he's the executive director of Goodhue County's Habitat for Humanity. And before I get into your life and all that, I want to jump real quick. How many homes do you build in Goodhue County in 1 year?
Well, that varies. Right now we're working on 2 homes. We expect to finish 2 homes before the end of the year. Next year our goal is to build 3. And the following year, we expect to build 4.
Are they the same plan?
They get modified to meet the lot requirements. It's a basic house that most people, if you've seen one, you might recognize another one. We always put a front porch on it. We believe that getting people out onto the front porch is a good idea. But it's a simple house. They're not really large. They're probably around 1,000 square feet.
Oh, that's okay.
And
how does it fit in with, like, for Red Wings city plans?
Good question. You know, affordable housing is a huge, huge issue. It's true here in Northfield. It's true in Red Wing. It's true all over, you know, Minnesota in general. Any place where you have population growth, there's just a huge need for affordable housing. And generally, our homes, we can put someone in a home and they can pay a mortgage that will be less than their rent. I had a woman move out of her apartment that was costing her $850 a month, and her mortgage was $650. So they do have a mortgage. People often have this misconception that Habitat builds homes and then gives them away to people. And that is, there's nothing like that happening. We charge people the appraised value of the home.
Wow.
Now,
by the county?
We have it appraised by, you know, an independent appraiser. Now, having said that, there are some caveats. And the way we structure our program is we evaluate their income. And in Goodhue County, we will never charge them more than 26% of their income.
Okay.
So often what that means is there's a big gap between what they can afford, what we consider affordable, and what the house appraises at, particularly these days as appraisals are getting higher and higher. So we make up the difference of that gap by creating second mortgages that they don't have to pay unless they sell their home. So what that does, it prevents them from taking advantage of the difference in value and flipping the home and making some money. But it also protects us from, gives us the ability to recoup our money at some point.
Do they work on the second mortgage after the first mortgage is paid off?
No, actually not. That mortgage just sits there idle. And in most cases, depends on how we write the loan agreement, but in most cases, they only have to pay that mortgage if they sell the house.
So, and how long must they live in that home?
Well, most of our mortgages are structured as a 30-year mortgage, just like everyone else.
But they could sell it the next year if they wanted to?
Well, they could, but they would have to pay back that second mortgage. And that would make it pretty difficult to sell and make any money at all. You'd probably, there's some closing costs involved, so you'd probably lose money if you sold, because you'd have to pay a realtor's fee, just like everyone else.
This crazy market right now, I mean, they're building homes for $300,000 that are, two bedrooms.
Right. You're right about that. So, yeah, there is, certainly we're concerned about that. To my knowledge, in the 25 years that Goodhue County's been in existence, we've had a couple families that have said, homeownership isn't for me, and I want to sell the house. And in some cases, we just recouped the house ourselves and then sold it to another family as an affordable home. I don't think I've ever heard of anyone trying to make any dollars off of it. The other thing that you have to think about is they're required to put in 200 hours of sweat equity per adult. So they've got that invested in the home as well.
200 hours, divide that by a 40-hour week. We got 5 days, or what, 50 days of hands-on physical labor?
Right. And although our volunteer shifts, are a little random. I mean, we have volunteer shifts like from 4 to 8 at night. So it takes some effort to get those 200 hours into the project.
And they can do everything from drywalling, painting, putting in the sidewalk, do the landscaping.
Much of our work is done by volunteers, especially the carpentry part. Over in Goodhue, we have we've been really fortunate. We've had youth groups that have come to our affiliate and donated a week of time. And last week we had a group from Geneva, Illinois, that this is their third year that they've come. And it was a group of 9 kids and 4 adults. And those 9 kids and 4 adults managed to put up all the roof trusses on a house by hand and put all the sheathing on the roof. And they did a lot of other jobs as well. But that I just thought that was astounding that they were able to do that.
When that house is being, by the way, John Parks is my guest here this morning, Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity. And we're going to get to know all about him. But right now, I just want to know what he does. Now, do you then, in the position that you're in the background and experience, do you pick up a hammer yourself?
Oh, absolutely. And it's probably one of my weaknesses. I can't completely stay away from the construction site, and especially when the kids are in town, it's kind of all hands on deck, because we want to make sure that they're safe. We want to make sure that they feel like they've contributed, and we want them to have a good time. So we have construction staff that we have hired. One's they're both part-time, and they're only there when the volunteers are there. So I fill in as needed.
Is it kind of like herding cats when you have 9 people?
it can be, but most of these kids have done this before, and they have, they always come with chaperones. This last group, they call them their advisors, and they know what to do. I mean, we give them direction, of course, but once they get pointed in the right direction, I've seen kids shovel rock all day. I've seen kids pound nails all day, and they just go at it. There's a lot of negativity out there about teenagers these days, and I want to tell you, I've seen the opposite. I've seen we've had 3 youth groups in town now, and one stayed for 2 weeks. I got to know those kids like they were my nieces and nephews. these are hardworking kids. I watched a girl shovel rock that's all she did for 3 days straight. She shoveled gravel into the hole of the basement. This was earlier in the season, but I'm just very impressed. If these kids are any indication of what our future holds for us, I'm optimistic.
Well, what about the location for a house built by Habitat for Humanity?
Mm-hmm.
Do you peruse the available lots, and are there people that own those lots that may donate the lot? And
it does happen, Wayne.
Yeah.
We have had that happen. More times than not, we pay a competitive price for a lot. We're always looking for a bargain. We end up building on lots that nobody else wants. I've had people donate homes, you know, that they were just beyond repair in their mind. And in some cases, they are beyond repair. In other cases, we've been able to renovate homes. But finding land is a huge issue, as you can imagine. We're trying to buy land in Cannon Falls right now. We would like to have another family served in Cannon Falls. We have a great volunteer base there, and we built there 2 years in a row, and we were really hopeful that we could build another home this year, but we have not been able to find an affordable lot. So,
what's affordable under most circumstances?
Well, when you push $30,000, it starts really making the numbers hard. Appraisals are high, but we're still trying to keep our costs down, you know. I think an affordable lot is $30,000 and under.
Do you do wooded lots and have to clear a lot of trees?
Generally, well, let's just put it this way. In the time that I've been there, which is only 4 years, the lots that I've built on have been what I would call infill lots. They're lots that are already exist in town. In two cases I can think of, there were houses that had burned, and the homeowner just threw their hands up in the air and ended up selling off the lot for, you know, really a bargain, actually. In most cases, we're getting lots for $10,000 to $20,000. So lots that require a lot of clearing, we have not, in my knowledge, we haven't had a lot of those kind of properties.
What about the individuals that have given up a lot and scrapped and scraped, and they bought a lot and they built a home, regular everyday people, they're mm-hmm. qualified through the bank and all that, and so you got one here and then skip a lot, and then you have another one that young people have been able to get their financing and build the home of their dreams, maybe a starter home,
right,
or an existing home. And then Habitat for Humanity comes in and buys the lot,
mm-hmm.
and is going to build, and then somebody is going to live there.
Right.
Is there any prejudice at all towards those individuals that are basically too poor to afford a house in that neighborhood, but now there's going to be a single mom or a single dad with four kids or whatever?
So that's a really good question, and I think that what we've experienced, at least in my tenure here, is that there are people who are nervous about Habitat coming to the neighborhood. But once we're there, we find out just the opposite. People are glad to have us. We bring something to the neighborhood that in many cases is missing, and that's community. We had a house in Red Wing that an elderly woman had lived in for many, many years, and then she basically abandoned it and moved into assisted living, and she left all her worldly possessions in that house. And it sat that way for 7 years. And the neighbors were very in favor of us burning that house to the ground and starting over. And we said, no, we think we can make something out of this house. We think we can renovate it and make it look better than maybe some of the other houses in the neighborhood. And it turned out that that's exactly what happened. We had a retired group of guys who work on it every Monday. They're working on it right now, I can tell you, about seven or eight guys. and the neighbors have come around 180 degrees, and they're so glad to have us. And the woman that's going to move into that home, while she probably wouldn't qualify for regular bank financing, it's not because of lack of effort. She's a hardworking person. She has a full-time job. She pays her bills. And people have to go through quite the vetting process to be chosen. We want them to be creditworthy.
Why don't we take a brief break and we'll find out what that vetting is.
All right. Sounds great.
9:35 on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN. My guest this morning is John Parks. He's the executive director of the Goodhue County Habitat for Humanity. And we are going to be back in just a moment.
Are you tired of that icky old shower, crumbling old tile, or outdated bathtub? Rebath can help in as little as one day. Rebath is locally owned and would be glad to meet with you for a free estimate. Call us today at 1-800-BATH-TUB to turn that old bathroom into new.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
Millstream Commons Assisted Living is where the all-star seniors enjoy life in Northfield. From the delicious meals, the bright, spacious apartments, the volunteer projects, the bus trips we take, classes we attend, and the music we enjoy, there's something for everyone. At Millstream Commons, we treat everyone like an MVP. For more information, call 507-650-0141.
Name this tune.
Now that's not from 74.
Yes, it is.
No kidding. Oh, if you got a problem, I can help.
Yes.
That's it.
Who sang it?
I couldn't
if
tell you,
you
that.
Got a problem,
who is that?
Billy
Swan. Billy Swan. He's a one-hit wonder.
But I think the song is so appropriate for our interview.
Well, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of it like that. Yep, that's what we're all about over there.
At 22 minutes before 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair on this absolutely gorgeous last Monday of July already. Mm. Oh, boy, how time flies.
Went by.
Our guest this morning, as I mentioned, John Parks, and he's the executive director of the Goodhue County Habitat for Humanity. When I was first approached by that and used that name in regards to donating or helping, and I'm thinking, well, you hear habitat, you think animals, and then you hear Habitat for Humanity, and I was thinking, well, people should build a habitat for the fox and the pheasants and whatever. And then I learned that it was an individual or a family can get a house that they couldn't afford under normal circumstances, and they have to qualify for this. And then they have people like yourself, a professional builder, and other volunteers that take care of that house, and you have to help yourself. So how do you vet these people? You must have a lot of people wanting to get in on this.
You know, you would think that we would be overrun with families applying, but there is a stigma. You know, you asked about prejudice, and I think that in many cases people in some cases people think that they would never qualify. In other cases, they think they make too much money, but we have a standard that we adhere to. Currently, our standard is somewhere between 60 and 70% of adjusted median income is what we're looking for in terms of qualifying families. So their income levels are checked, and they have to fall in those guidelines. But then we also do a fairly robust credit report to find out just what kind of debt they might have or how they pay their bills. And if they...
Information is volunteered to you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. They know that they're going to have to, you know, answer those questions when they apply. I mean, the application document alone is 8 pages.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, we're asking for a lot of information. And then we have what we call a family selection committee that actually, and these are people that have banking backgrounds, and they review the clients just as if they were going to apply for a commercial loan, and they evaluate them to decide whether they're a good risk or not. And there's, but there's other criteria as well. They need to show a willingness to partner with us. Are they going to actually put in the 200 hours per adult? And then there's also the need for housing. We, you know, just because you want a house doesn't mean that we're looking for the people that need the housing the most. So we had a family in Cannon Falls, for instance, that she had a very nice place to live. It just so happened that it was in her parents' basement. So we don't think that's a long-term solution if you're trying to raise two kids to do it out of your parents' basement. So she was able to move into a house in Cannon Falls, a home of her own. So we scrutinize them carefully. And then the other thing that we do is we stand beside them while we're working through this process, because it's complicated. As you can imagine, you know, not only they have to select all these things for the house, we give them some choices. You know, they pick out paint colors, they pick out shingle colors. And if you've been living in an apartment all your life where maybe once you painted a living room wall, to have to go through and figure out what kind of flooring you want and what color you're going to stain your woodwork, these are all decisions that most folks have never had to struggle with. And it can be overwhelming.
Well, I believe it. My wife is the type that says, you know, we should do this and do that. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine it. And
she
then I
sees
say,
it.
Like flooring, for example, hey, we're walking on the floor. Why do you have to replace it? We're just walking on the floor. That's all it is. And I don't know. It wasn't linoleum.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, she could visualize and did a kitchen remodel and a bathroom remodel.
Right.
And Wayne, what color do you want this? I don't care.
Right. Right.
So it can be a real thrill for somebody that has that talent,
yes,
to be able to do that. But like you say, some of them never were in the position to spend $3,000 on cabinets.
Right.
And now they got to pick which one and what color.
It's intimidating.
Yes.
So we actually have a person for every family. We have what we call a family advocate. And that's someone that's assigned to kind of help them through some of those decisions. So, and I get to do a fair amount of that as well.
I sold women's shoes for a while I was in school.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned how women can, you know, want to change their mind and visualize what they want.
It's genetic, right?
I don't know what it is, but, you know, you had to have a lot of patience. Well, I like this, but I would like a different color, or it doesn't fit right, but I like it. And so I can see where they would be overwhelmed at times. So I know of a Habitat for Humanity home that is built in a very new area of Northfield.
Hmm.
And I go by it, and I think that's the one. And it looks like the other homes
right.
in the area. I think, do you build duplexes?
Some affiliates do. We have never built a duplex in Goodhue County, but I wouldn't be surprised if they have here in Rice.
And it's among other new places
mm-hmm.
in a very beautiful neighborhood.
Right.
And that's where I came up and wondered, you know, if some people think that they're too uppity-up to have somebody live next to them. So I imagine you have rules in regards to keeping the place, the appearance of the place.
Well, we certainly have guidelines, and our mortgage documents have requirements that they are supposed to live up to. But if you think about it, once they've bought the home, I think about my first home that I bought, the bank that I bought it from, I probably signed some documents that said I would treat the home in such and such fashion, but the bank that I bought it from had no idea what I was doing once I bought it. I could have turned it into a crack house and they wouldn't have known any different. The value that we see with Habitat for Humanity is we stay in contact with our families. Now, I'll have to say that not every person treats their home the way all their neighbors might appreciate. I would have to say that we have a very good track record. With very few exceptions, people do treat their homes very well. They maintain them. We put them through homeowner classes, so they need to learn how to keep up their home. And we talk to folks about being a good neighbor. But we can't promise that every person is going to maintain their home perfectly. But you can't promise that about anybody. You know, in any neighborhood, you're going to have somebody that lets the dandelions crop up in their yard or their dog barks at night. I don't care where you live. There's always those issues. And, you know, I think most of our families are good, hardworking people that try and treat their neighbors with respect. So
do you have more couples married than you do singles that could be male or female? Is the single mother your most prominent client?
I would say that in my time here that I've seen more single mothers apply and qualify. We're currently building for a family of a husband and wife with five kids in Red Wing.
How many bedrooms?
Wonderful family. That's going to be a four-bedroom home.
Okay.
Yep, and that's as big as we can make it.
Yep.
So the lot wouldn't accommodate a bigger house, and that's just, and they're going to make it work. And I'm confident they will. But, you know, single moms really have a hard task. And we think that stable home ownership and a stable place to live is central to success for a single mom or any single parent for that matter. It's just, I think, I'm so glad that, you know, that I was raised by a mom and a dad, and I'm not taking anything away from single parents, but I just think it's a real challenge for them. And so if we can fix the housing portion of their lives, then that's going to give them a lot more opportunity to raise their kids the way they want to.
Do you knock on doors and introduce yourself and tell the neighbors to the left and the neighbors to the right and maybe the neighbors behind you, here's what we're doing, and we're going to send the recipient over to your home to introduce them?
Well, what we do that kind of addresses that, Wayne, is every time we get ready to build a house, and in many cases, Habitat has owned the lot for years before we're able to build. Because if you can imagine, we're only building one or two or maybe three homes. You know, if we've got a backlog of three or four lots, it's going to take some time for us to get to that lot. So we put signs up ahead of time so that people know that Habitat owns this lot. So it gives people a chance to kind of get used to the idea. And we have a good reputation in Goodhue County. So in most cases, we don't get the pushback of not in my backyard. But then when we get ready to build a home, we have a groundbreaking ceremony, and we flyer the whole neighborhood. We invite the whole neighborhood over, and, you know, I would say we get a smattering of neighbors that come over and see what this is all about, take the opportunity to meet the family, and it's a way to break the ice.
What about families with four little kids,
mm-hmm.
let's say seven on down to an infant, into an older neighborhood where it's grandma and grandpa living in homes mm-hmm. that are 30 years old plus.
Right.
And then all of a sudden this family comes in with kids.
Right.
Any pushback on that?
Well, the neighborhoods that I've built in have been very diverse. You have everything from seniors that are, you know, hanging on to their homes as long as they can, to young families. So I can never remember an occasion where we've moved into a neighborhood that's very exclusive that way. You know, truth is, those lots aren't usually available to us. You know, we can't afford them. We were in a kind of a crunch situation this spring where we were desperate to find a lot. And some of the lots that I looked at that were in newer neighborhoods, you know, they were just out of our price range. They were $40,000. And, you know, we'd have been building this 1,000 square foot house next to somebody's 3,000 square foot house. We don't want to do that. You know, we don't want to be the something that sticks out like a sore thumb in the neighborhood. It doesn't serve us well. It doesn't serve the family well. So we're kind of conscientious about that. You know, here in Northfield, I don't even think you can buy a lot for under $50,000. It's a real struggle to build in Northfield.
Well, it is already 9 minutes before 10 o'clock. My guest this morning is John Parks. And he is executive director of the Goodhue County Habitat for Humanity. There we go. Final break this hour. Stand by.
On September 27th, KYMN will celebrate 50 years of local radio. We're proud of our work here in Northfield, and we want to thank the community for supporting us. On August the 3rd, we'll be blocking off Division Street in downtown Northfield in front of the station between 2nd and 3rd Streets from 5 to 9 p.m. Performances will include the Folklorico Dancers, the Aztec Dancers, and the Rice County All-Stars. We'll have lots of prizes, some swag, and of course, cake and ice cream, too. Join us for the kickoff to our 50-year celebration of local broadcasting. That's Friday, August the 3rd, right in front of the KYMN studios. Event sponsors include the Northfield Area Chamber of Commerce, ServiceMaster by Hyatt, the Northfield Golf Club, the Grand Event Center, Ambi, Elite Auto, the Archer House, and Cannon Valley Cinema 10.
What's the best part of grilling season? Grissom Sweet Corn, of course. Grissom's Corn is back and at a new location, just off Highway 3 between 2nd and 3rd Street, right next to the Quarterback Club. Let Glenn and Cindy Grissom's friendly employees help you with the area's best fresh-picked sweet corn and have some for dinner tonight.
Sogan Cabinet Company in Denison invites you to Denison Days this Friday and Saturday. If you are building or remodeling a home, contact Sogan Cabinet Company to find the style you are looking for. Don't miss the fun. Check out Denison Days this weekend.
All right, John, here we go.
I know what that one is.
What is it?
That's Seasons in the Sun.
We've known each other since
Oh, now you will know who did it.
Together we've climbed hills and trees.
Another one-hit wonder. It was Terry somebody. ABC. Terry.
Skinned our hearts and skinned our knees. Goodbye, my friend, it's Terry. Hard to die.
Was it Jack?
Yes.
When Terry all Jack?
Yes. You got it, Terry Jacks, Seasons in the Sun, the number two song of all of Billboard Magazine's Top 100 for the year 1974.
Way back when.
I'll be there. We had joy, we had fun, we had seasons in the sun, but the hills...
You're doing pretty good with
these
hits.
That's pretty catchy, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to switch over from Habitat for Humanity, which is your job, in Goodhue County as the executive director. And you said you have two of them going right now?
Two houses under construction,
okay.
Correct.
And can you tell me where they are?
Sure. The first one is what we call the east side of Red Wing. This is a new construction, and it's if you know where Runnings is in Red Wing, it's just behind Runnings. It's actually right where they're doing the bridge construction, so we get to listen to semis and heavy equipment all day long. But it's if you know, there's a big, beautiful bluff when you come into Red Wing called Barn Bluff, and that is sort of the backdrop of their home. You can there's a big American flag on top of the bluff, and you can see that right from their kitchen window.
Okay, are they on the east side?
We call it the East End. You know, it's kind of weird. People don't realize this, but the river runs east and west in Red Wing.
Yeah, and Cannon River runs north and south.
Okay.
It flows north.
Oh, the Cannon River flows north?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, well, it goes over to Red
Wing.
Well,
sure. Yeah. Sure. Yeah, of course. So that one is on the east end. And then the other one's in an old established neighborhood. And this is the one that we've been renovating where we bought it from the previous homeowner.
Well, what did you do with the old lady's stuff?
Oh, well, we told her take as much as you can or as much as you want. And we still filled up two dumpsters.
Okay. Was it obviously nothing of value?
No. No. There was, I did have one guy, he pulled out one of those plastic lunch boxes and he said, oh, you should keep this and try and sell it on eBay. You know, they're really valuable. And so I went on eBay and looked, and they were like $10, you know.
Oh, if you're at, if it's your hobby, you know,
right,
maybe.
Right. So,
yeah.
But that house is going to be beautiful. It's a lot of the rooms are going to have hardwood floors,
ooh,
which we don't usually.
How'd
we
you get
never
those?
We almost never put hardwood in a house.
Do you go to local distributors, local warehouses, local retailers, and you know, beg, borrow, and and see what you can
I'm not
get.
Opposed to begging.
Yeah.
You know, I will I will throw myself on the ground, prostrate to try and get our costs down. You know, I do it because the families need that help. So we have a lot of donors that give us, you know, financial help in the way of discounts. We have partnerships with large-scale vendors. Valspar Paint is a big supporter of Habitat. Valspar Paints.
Valspar?
Yeah, local Minnesota company. Actually, Valspar was recently bought out by Sherwin-Williams, but most people who are in the building trades know about Sherwin-Williams, and now they've continued the partnership where we can get paint donated. We get a donation from Dow Chemical, actually. They donate a lot of insulation products for our homes. You have to put quite a bit of foam insulation into homes these days to meet code. And that's a great benefit to us. And
what is the code now?
The walls are now up to R21. It used to be R19. And then the ceilings are R49. Habitat typically exceeds code. We believe that, you know, putting a little extra money into those kind of features will save the homeowners in the end. So we insulate higher than code. We use durable products that we think are going to last a long, long time. And in the end, we think that that serves the homeowner well.
What about the city and the county? How do they accept Habitat for Humanity in regards to their inspections and tax breaks or anything like that?
Well, the cities are generally great partners. In fact, the home that I mentioned that we renovated, we learned about that home from the local building inspector who had been getting complaints from neighbors about an abandoned house. And he notified us who the homeowner was, and we started negotiating with her, and that's how we got that house. So I've always, you know, even as a builder for 20 years, people in my profession often see building inspectors as kind of a pain in the neck. I see them as a resource. These are people who know the codes, they know the rules, and in most cases, those rules are there for a good reason, you know. And so I don't treat them as adversarial. I treat them as my resource. And because of that, I've always maintained good relationships with building inspectors.
Well, we're almost at 10 o'clock here on the Wayne Eddy Affair, and we are then going to join the news network. By the way, in regards to Habitat for Humanity, does that include building an outbuilding, a garage, for example?
We do build garages typically. Other parts of the country, they do not. And they, in fact, some places they restrict the building of garages because they feel it's unnecessary. What we say up here in the North Country is, come and live here for a year before you tell us whether a garage is necessary. We believe they're necessary.
Are they attached normally?
Sometimes. It varies. It depends on the lot. I've built them both ways.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break for the news, and we'll be back with our guest. His name is John Parks. He is the executive director of Goodhue County's Habitat for Humanity. You are listening to the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN 1080 Radio and the 95.1 FM from Northfield, Minnesota. It's 10 o'clock.
Deadly fires. Giuliani put down. I'm John Trout. The death toll has risen to 8 lives lost in California wildfires, but correspondent Jim Roop reports progress is being made in fire containment.
Containment on the car fire that has now killed 6 people has finally reached double digits.
We're feeling a lot more optimistic today as we are starting to gain some ground.
But, says CAL FIRE's Brett Govea, it is still mostly out of control. This fire has destroyed nearly 900 structures and has chewed through more than 95,000 acres of tinder dry brush. There are 17 wildfires burning in the state of California alone, with 4 in the northern part of the state considered the most significant.
No help from Mother Nature in fighting those fires. Significant rain is not in the forecast this week. President Trump's attorney, Rudy Giuliani, once a supporter of former Trump lawyer Michael Cohen, explains why he's not a fan anymore.
How did I know that he was a lawyer taping his client? You tell me a lawyer is taping his client, I got to say, sorry, I made a mistake. The guy is unethical. He's a scumbag. He's a horrible person. I've never heard of a lawyer taping his client without the client's consent.
Court appearance today for the man charged with killing 5 people in the newsroom of a Maryland newspaper.
It's an initial appearance for Jared Ramos set for this morning in Anne Arundel County City Court. A grand jury has indicted Ramos on 23 counts, including murder, attempted murder, and assault, after county police say he used a shotgun to blast his way into the Capital Gazette's Annapolis newsroom June 28th.
There's Scott Carr. Coca-Cola says the Trump administration aluminum tariffs are putting a dent in their profits.
CEO James Quincy calls the price hike disruptive but necessary and says the Trump administration's 10% tariff on imported aluminum is making it more expensive to produce the cans. A Coke spokesperson says it's going to be up to stores to decide whether to pass the higher prices on to customers.
There's Pat Piper from Washington on Wall Street. The NASDAQ is down 72 points. I'm John Trout.
Welcome back to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station, the 95.1 FM. This is KYMN 1080 AM, and at 11 o'clock this morning, on today's 15 with the author, Terry Knight's guest is New York Times best-selling author Anne Hood with her latest novel, She Loves You. Yeah, yeah, yeah. A coming-of-age book set in the 1960s. The Vietnam War rages overseas. The Beatles have catapulted into stardom. And 12-year-old Trudy Mixer is not thrilled with life. She created the Beatles fan club, but now there are only 3 other members, the least popular kids at school. Trudy decides to turn things around. She's going to meet Paul McCartney at the Beatles concert, and she's going to take the fan club with her. And so begins their journey. Hood has written a sincere and funny story, sharing her love of the Beatles and reliving those days. Each chapter is named after a Beatles song that fits perfectly with the story, and that comes up at 11 o'clock.
Send me a postcard, drop me a line, stating point of view.
Whoever thought that answer could be given now. They were young boys, young men, when they sang that song, thinking 64 was really old. And I did the same thing when I was in my age. But we have a gentleman by the name of John Parks. He's from Wisconsin. I think he calls it El Paso, Wisconsin.
El Paso.
And that's a weird name, but he told us about that earlier. And he is the executive director of the Goodhue Habitat for Humanity. Now, this part of my show, John, is all about you. Where were you born?
Ah, well, I was born in southern Illinois, about 30 miles outside of St. Louis, a town called Alton, Illinois.
Okay.
Another river town. And spent all my growing up years there in that town.
In one house?
When I was about seven, we moved to a more suburban area, which was a little town called Godfrey. Just kind of, I can't even think of a good analogy. Alton was about 50,000.
Wow.
So it wasn't a real small town. In fact, my high school was, I had a graduating class of almost 1,000 people.
In Iowa?
Or no, Illinois? Illinois, right.
Okay. Wow, that's a story I never anticipated.
So Alton is really a bit of a suburb of St. Louis.
Okay.
But it's another situation where I think of Hudson, Wisconsin, where I lived for many years, as compared to St. Paul.
Okay.
You know, kind of that arrangement.
Do you have siblings?
I do.
How many?
I was born into a family of four siblings. Or three siblings.
Who's the oldest?
My brother Jim is the oldest.
And how much older is he than you?
He's 7 years older.
And then after Jim?
After Jim comes my sister Judith.
Judith?
Who, yep.
Is it Judy or Judith?
Well, when she hit a certain age, she no longer wanted to be Judy.
Okay. How much older is she than
She's
you?
She's 4 years older than me.
Okay. And then you?
And then me. I was a third kid. And then I had a younger brother. 4 years younger, but he passed away recently.
What was his name?
It was Joe.
Joe.
Yep.
I knew that it was going to start
with a J.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty.
How much younger was he?
4 years.
4 years.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So you got Jim, Judy, John, and Joe.
Right.
And what's mom and dad's name?
That was Ed and Mary.
Ed and Mary.
Yep.
Okay. And your mother's maiden name?
She was a Sweeney.
Sweeney, old Irish.
Definitely Irish. Her father was Irish.
And what is Parks?
Parks is more English.
Okay.
Yeah, I've done some research into my family history, and that's an English name and an English spelling of Parks.
I have an English name with an Irish background.
Okay.
So there's a similarity.
Yeah.
You.
Definitely.
I would like to be as handsome as you.
Oh.
Then everything would be great.
It's a good thing we're on radio, Wayne.
Well, you got a good face for radio, as they say. It's an old joke, but I love to use it.
I love that joke.
So you're growing up in this big town of Alton.
Right.
And you're 1,000 people. Wow. What? You graduated in 74.
Yep.
So don't tell me. You're born in 56.
There you go.
Okay.
Yep.
So Elvis was doing his thing when you were just a little itty-bitty baby.
Right. I think I was pretty clueless about Elvis. I think the Beatles probably were the first musical thing that came into my conscience. Although, I'm a music lover, and my mother was a music lover, and she really started that. She loved the Rodgers and Hammerstein operas.
You know, operas?
Well, okay. Musicals. Let's call them musicals.
Yeah.
So Music Man, Flower Drum Song, South Pacific, Oklahoma, all of those. I heard those songs in my youth on a record player. Probably know way too many of those songs, all the lyrics, that I won't sing for you. I won't sing for you now, but those songs are stuck in my head.
Now, when you were growing up, was Jim an older protective brother, or did he, you know, push you around?
I would put him in the protective range. He was, well, you know, he was seven years older, so he was into his own things, and occasionally he would jump in and kind of become dad for a moment, you mm-hmm. know, with myself and my younger brother, Joe. So...
So, everybody knows I always ask this question.
Okay.
Do you remember your first bicycle? Wow.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember which one. I definitely remember both of my. I had two bicycles.
Okay.
The first was probably a Sears and Roebuck right out of the store that I rode, just a single speed bike. But what I really remember is probably by the time I was, maybe 10 or 11, I just had a real strong hankering to have a three-speed bike. That was everything back then. And I had a paper route. And so, my parents said, well, you save up some money and you can go buy one. And so I'd saved probably like $50. I wanted to buy a Raleigh English three-speed bike. And my brother got in the mix. He says, hey, we're going to go down to Eddie's bicycle shop. We'll get you a bike. So we went down there, and for $19, you could buy a three-speed bike. It wasn't a Raleigh, but to me it was, it was like freedom. And I don't know how kids do it these days. When I was a kid, summers seemed to last forever, and it was hot and humid where I lived. But we would periodically just leave the house and just go all day on our bikes, And, if you wouldn't get in trouble unless you came home late for dinner. That was just the way it was. And, I wouldn't have it any other way. I don't know. I think about kids today that are, locked up in their homes all day, stuck to screens. We watch television at night, of course, but during the day it was outside. That's where we lived. And
what type of a neighborhood?
Well, when we moved out to Godfrey, it was a suburban neighborhood, and so it was a subdivision. But it was a subdivision that was on the edge of farmland. So while I had a bunch of kids that I grew up with that were all my age, we were all baby boomers. So, I would say 2/3 of the families in that suburb, in that subdivision, were families that had 2 to 4 children. So you could make a football team come together with a few phone calls, or a baseball team, and there was a vacant lot in town in our subdivision, and that turned into the ball field or the football field or whatever else we were up to. And so I had all these kids that,
Did you have a swimming hole or pool?
Now, that was a problem. that part of the world, water is not as abundant as it is here. So there was a quarry, an old rock quarry that had filled in with water that you could swim in. I didn't get to do that until I was older and we could drive to it. We had, I don't know what you'd call it. It was sort of like a country club that my parents had bought membership to because it had a swimming pool. And so they would take us up there on a given, particularly when my dad was home for the weekend, that's when he wanted a little space from him and his four kids. And so they'd take us up to the summer sport is what we called it. And you'd spend the whole day in a pool.
Did you ever go on vacation, the six of you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did.
Would you travel by car?
Almost always by car. We had a favored place. It was Lake of the Ozarks, which was in Missouri. And we would go down there and spend a week and water ski and stay at a, some motel that had, lake frontage. And, yeah, those were great times.
When did you take up fly fishing?
Oh, well, that started on my honeymoon. Yeah, that's when that started.
What, was it some resort that had a special trout farm?
Or? No, my wife and I, when we got married, we took a very long road trip, and we drove out west.
What were you driving?
We were driving a 72? Yeah, probably about a 72 Datsun station wagon, and we called it the spoiled banana, because it was yellow, and it had rust spots all over it. It looked like a banana that had spoiled. Yeah. But we drove that thing all the way to almost to Edmonton, Canada. And when I got to Canada, that's when I got the bug, because you could see these huge trout cruising around these lakes in crystal clear water, and they told me the only way to catch them is with a fly rod. Well, I bought a cheapo fly rod, and it didn't make a bit of difference. I just flailed the water for hours with no results.
Well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to go to high school with our guest. He is the executive director of the Goodhue County Habitat for Humanity. John Parks is his name, and he has some English origin. Let's hear from our friends right now.
Tracy's Tree Service would like to invite you to Denison Days this weekend. Head to Denison for great times, good food, fun activities, and of course, cold beverages. Tracy's Tree Service is your full-service tree-moving company, specializing in growing and transplanting trees of any size for any project.
On September 27th, KYMN will celebrate 50 years of local radio. We're proud of our work here in Northfield, and we want to thank the community for supporting us. On August the 3rd, we'll be blocking off Division Street in downtown Northfield in front of the station between 2nd and 3rd Streets from 5 to 9 p.m. Performances will include the Folklorico Dancers, the Aztec Dancers, and the Rice County All-Stars. We'll have lots of prizes, some swag, and of course, cake and ice cream, too. Join us for the kickoff to our 50-year celebration of local broadcasting. That's Friday, August the 3rd, right in front of the KYMN studios. Event sponsors include ServiceMaster by Hyatt, the Northfield Area Chamber of Commerce, the Northfield Golf Club, the Grand Event Center, and by Ziggy's, the Rare Pair, and Ekato Foods.
And that's just the beginning of a celebration for 50 years in Northfield. See you Friday right here in front of our KYMN studios.
Come on, baby. Do
I come to your point? No, because I'm too loud. Are you? Should you be that loud?
Rolling. One, two. It sounds like if what I think it is.
Everybody's doing
the locomotion.
Come on, baby. Do the locomotion. I know you get to like
I don't
it.
Not, I don't know the I don't know the the artist.
This song was number 8 in all of 1974, the year my guest graduated from high school. His name is John Parks, and he named that tune The Locomotion. And it's done by, I'll say the first word, Grand.
Not Grand Funk. Grand Funk Railroad did this?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
When you were a kid, John, you, of course, carried newspapers. So far, it's similar to what I was doing some 15 years ago. Earlier,
mm-hmm.
So you earned enough money to go out and buy yourself your very first three-speed bike.
Three-speed
it wasn't
bike.
A Raleigh, but it was only like 18, 19 bucks.
It was reasonable.
And, of course, the worst thing about carrying newspapers, forget about the load, forget about the length, and think about the weather. And then the worst thing after a snowstorm or a rainy blizzard-like day is those people that you could not collect from.
There you go.
And you'd go
knock
there.
Knock and knock and knock.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
you know the drill.
And some of the people that I deliver to, I just knew that they couldn't afford a newspaper.
Hmm.
But they were on my subscription list that I inherited.
Hmm.
And I figured it's charity. I mean, they were poor people.
Sure.
And I paid for the paper.
Wow.
So, I mean, because I didn't collect enough money.
Right,
so.
Right. You still had to pay for the papers.
You get into high school. What's the name of the high school?
Alton Senior High.
Okay, with over 1,000 people in your class.
Well, yeah, the graduating class, I think it was 900 and some. But
that's a lot.
But the student body was 3,000.
Yeah.
It was huge.
It was huge. And Alton is the name of it, right?
That's correct.
Okay, now my question for you is, when you were in high school, what did you get involved in other than the required stuff?
Well, my because I had a love for music, I was always involved in a band. When I was younger, probably even choir, but you know, by the time you get to high school, you have this certain masculine identity that you have to uphold, and choir didn't fit in. So, but band worked. So, I played trombone from an early age, and so I was in a marching band. And the band that I was part of was called the Marching 100, and it had quite a reputation. They were invited to go all over the area. I wouldn't say we went too far, but we would perform at football games. You know, you'd often see a high school marching band where you make formations. And so that was probably my main extracurricular activity. I did some sports. I wasn't super athletic. Running was about the, you know, my strongest skill. I distance running. So I tried that for a while, but band I stayed with throughout high school.
What chair?
I was probably third.
Really?
Yeah.
When you do the formations, and is it a four count or an eight count when you move, or is it both?
It's done. When we did formations, now some bands, you know, you see them break into a rank that just moves in one direction, like they'll pivot from one point or another. We did formations where the leader, the end guy, would lead his group, and he was supposed to wind up at a certain place at a certain time in time to the music. So it was a little different. You know, you just see all these squigglies running all over the field, and then they would just all form together into a football or a, you know, American flag, whatever.
Yeah. And, you know, that's hard to do.
It is. It's harder than you would think.
Have you ever, are you a drum and bugle corps guy?
Oh, I love drums. I love marching bands that come by with the drummers.
Yeah, but drum and bugle corps where they put on a show.
Oh, no, I'm not familiar with that.
And I know NPR or public television used to carry it. Hmm. I mean, Nice, they had flags. And we had a competition here in Northfield for a while during Defeated Jesse James days. Very expensive.
Hmm.
But anyhow, they're just super good.
Yeah.
And they are even more of a display of integrity when it comes to being musically sound.
Oh, sure.
And then their formations are just amazing.
Hmm.
And it gives me goose pimples when I hear them and see them.
Yep.
And I was hoping that you were familiar with them, because there's a pet peeve of mine when our public television runs the annual competition.
Mm-hmm.
They'll show a close up of a guy on a trumpet and a guy on a drum, and you want to see the whole thing.
Oh, right.
We don't want to see just
you
some
want the
guy's
spectacle
face, you know, or
right.
guy holding the cymbals. You want the whole thing, because
sure.
they're making all these moves in you.
Right.
So I was thinking you might have been. But that was similar to what you were doing
in marching
in high
band
school.
Formations were similar.
Did you ever get into a competitor's stadium and perform, and then the football game is tied at halftime?
Oh. I'm sure there were some times like that. You know, I was pretty much focused on the music. I enjoyed the sports as well, but I was more focused on the music. Actually, the other thing I did in band was I got to be part of a jazz pep band that we played at high school basketball games. Now that, oh boy, that was exciting. I mean, you were right there front and center, and, you know, you'd break into songs at the breaks. I'd go back and do that again if I could.
Now, you mentioned that you dabbled in sports, and the one that you probably enjoyed most was long distance running.
Yeah.
I always ask this question. No matter what, somebody that has been involved in high school sports, college sports, professionals I have on the air, I ask them, what's that one thing that you'll never forget? What is it?
I have a story. You know, I wasn't very good at it, but I was persistent, and I was dedicated. So we had a meet with another school that was really tough. We knew they had great runners, and it was the half mile. And the coach pulled me aside, and he said, "Listen here, Parks, here's what I want you to do." He says, "I want you to come out of the gate like you're sprinting." He said, like you're running a 220. Forget it was an 880. It was a half mile. He said, forget about the half mile. You're not going to win. I just want you to get out there and drag the competition into a pace that they can't keep up. I think I finished dead last, but for that first 220, I was definitely out in front of everybody.
And what was the moral of his story?
Well, what he was trying to do was weaken down the competition so that some of our better runners who knew what I was up to wouldn't try and keep pace with me. So okay. We burned these other guys out in the first 220 yards.
Did it work?
I think it did. It sure worked for me because I finished last.
Yeah, but you had the fun of being in the lead for half the race.
Oh, yeah. It was exciting for a moment.
So you graduate from high school, and did your brother, Jim, have an opportunity to go to college?
He did.
And did Judy?
Judith. Yeah, Judith, they both. Now, Jim went to college for 3 years. He was a chemistry major, and if you remember, he was probably in school, probably would have been in the late 60s.
Drafted?
And no, he was not drafted because he had a student deferment. But he, as a chemistry major, he thought that his future might be making better napalm.
I was just in my head making napalm. Why?
That's what he thought he'd end up doing. And after 3 years, he dropped out. He went back to college much later in life and became a mechanical engineer. But, yeah, he turned his back on 3 years of college. It didn't go over well on the home front, as you can imagine. But my sister, she stayed in. She hung in there and did all 4 years and got a teaching degree.
And so, now along comes you.
Yep. I was not that motivated in school. There were certain things that I was very interested in. I was very interested in biology. And when I left high school, my plan was to go to college at Texas A&M in Galveston. I'd been accepted. Yeah. I had good grades. I was accepted to the College of Marine Science down there. And that was my plan, but plans have a way of changing. And I think what changed for me was I moved to Minnesota basically for a job. Now, this is a funny story. My older brother, he was now out of college, and he ended up working on the river, on the barge lines. And he worked for a local towing company in St. Paul, and he told me that he could get me on once I got out of high school. You know, he could get, so for a summer job, and it was decent pay. You know, it wasn't great pay, but for high school, you know, for out of high school, it wasn't too bad. And the year before, I'd bought a Corvair convertible.
Okay.
I was kind of a big deal because I had this Corvair convertible, and about a month before I left, the thing broke down, and it took forever to get it fixed. We finally had to throw a different transmission in it.
What year was it?
It was a 65.
Okay.
Yeah.
I had
Nader's, what they call it, Nader's Nightmare or something.
Wasn't there a spider, too?
It was a spider. It was a six-cylinder. I mean, this thing could get up and go.
I had a friend that lived in the same apartment building as me that put a Corvette engine sideways in a Corvair.
Oh, no.
And when we would go out on University Avenue in St. Paul and challenge those guys, at the stop sign, you rev the engine.
Oh, yeah.
And they'd see this little Corvair, and we would take off.
Just smoke them.
And he ended up, unfortunately, killing himself in that car.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, it was way too powerful.
Well, they were not a safe car. I mean, there was nothing between you and any collision.
You end up in St. Paul then?
So I drove up in the car, and my brother kept calling me up and saying, when are you going to get up here? You know, I said, well, I'm trying to get my car fixed. And he said, well, I'm holding this job for you. I'm holding it. You know, I don't know how long I can hold it. So I finally took off and in my Corvair, and it was still having trouble. I got about 100 miles from home, and it started popping out of third gear as I'm driving up the freeway. So I finally took my seatbelt from the back seat and lashed it into third gear so it wouldn't pop out. And I drove it, and I got to Rockford, Illinois, and it was pouring down rain. I'll never forget the day. I happen to drive by a gas station and I see all these Corvairs in a parking lot. It's like, what is that all about? Two blocks later, my car just quit. The engine was running, but I had no transmission. I'm stalled out there. I walk back to this place. I talk to this guy. He agrees to buy my car. My brother makes a midnight trip down from Minneapolis, comes down and picks me up and takes me home, picks me up in Rockford at like 4 in the morning, drives me home, and that was a Sunday. And then Monday rolls around, and I go to work. It's like, finally, you know, I finally am there to do my job. Well, it turns out the job that he was holding for me was a job cleaning barges out. Climb down a ladder into this barge, get a shovel and a broom, and start pushing rotten grain or fertilizer or coal from one end of the barge to the other where they could suck it out. This job was so bad that people were starting the job at 6 in the morning and quitting at noon. That was the job that he was holding for me. But I stuck it out and eventually became a deckhand on the river. But what happened was I developed a sense of community with my brother and his wife and their son and a roommate. I was living with him. And after the summer came to an end, I didn't want to go. I didn't want to go to Texas. So I decided I'd go to school at the U of M. And I went for a brief time. And I met my future wife. And we launched. And college just wasn't important to me after that. I went out and got a real job and started a family. And
what was the real job?
The first job that I had, the first job that I would consider a real job was I worked for an organization that ran group homes for the developmentally disabled. They had all these properties, and I got hired basically as a handyman to fix things, but it quickly morphed into much more than that. So that's how I really learned to do all my construction skills was the director of that business was a retired dentist, but he was a guy that was real hands-on, and truth be told, he would have rather been out in the field with me tiling bathrooms and fixing furnaces, but he was the director, so he couldn't. So he would just call me up and he'd say, have you ever done this before? And I'd say, no, never have. He says, you want to learn? Of course I want to learn. So he just talked me through many different projects that I became very adept at.
So you were a handyman.
In the beginning, that's what I started out. Guy that could fix broken windows and, you know, troubleshoot a furnace that didn't work anymore.
When you were down in the barges, did you talk to yourself?
No, it was usually, we did that, there was a team of people that they would send down in there, and things would echo in there. It was
that's what I mean.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean now. Yeah, you would talk to yourself. Yeah. Well, after falling in the river three times, I decided it was time to get
out. As a deckhand?
Three times.
How did you do that?
One time was horseplay.
Yeah.
You know, I was 18, and there was another young deckhand on the boat, and that one was almost tragic, actually. We always shut down the river season right before Thanksgiving. It was the day before Thanksgiving. We were on the Minnesota River, and this guy and I got into a snowball fight. And I was trying to get away from him, and I slipped and fell into the river.
Ooh.
The day before Thanksgiving, there was ice in the water. I had no life jacket. And the boat was hooked up to two barges headed downriver full speed. And so before they could get to me, they had to stop the barges.
That took forever.
It took a long time. And I was sitting there in the river treading water, trying to get my coat off, my heavy winter coat, trying to decide whether I could make it to shore. And, you know, I was watching them and their progress, and I thought, no, I'll just tread water here. I'll be okay. And by the time they got to me, I was far from okay. When they got me up on the deck of the boat, I was totally immobilized. I couldn't move anything. And
could you think?
Well, I could think, thank God that they grabbed me out of the river. That's okay. About all I could think.
What was the other time you went in?
Those were just, you know, incidents where missed footing. You know, I mean, falling off the barges was not that unusual. In fact, the following spring, a very experienced deckhand who'd been on the river 5 years. He fell off a barge, and I was on the tail end of the boat, so they just sailed away from me. But this guy was in front, and they saw him fall. They watched him float down along the barges. They threw a life ring to him. The same pilot that helped pull me out of the water was the same pilot on that boat, and he threw the ring to him, and Terry said, "I've got it." He went back in to stop the boat. When he came back out, the guy was gone. He drowned.
Oh, he was. So you rode the river from...
Just for a year.
St. Paul to New Orleans?
No. This was a local harbor. So we just moved small. You know, we'd move a barge or two from one place to another, you know, anywhere from Prescott to... up to, we'd go way up above Minneapolis through the locks. So, and that's ahead of navigation up there in North Minneapolis.
And while you're waiting at the docks, you're thinking, hey, I'm making good money and I'm just sitting here. Are we always busy?
You know, they like to keep you busy. I was what they call a utility deckhand, so I was responsible for keeping the engines oiled, lubricated, that kind of thing. So I always had to be down in the engine room checking things out. I've never been a person that likes to sit still very long.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back. Our guest this morning on your radio station is a gentleman by the name of John Parks. He's the executive director of the Goodhue County Habitat for Humanity. And right now we got him out of high school with a student body of about... 1,000, just a little less, and he's out working with his brother. Did you live in St. Paul, by the way, or Minneapolis?
Originally, I lived in Minneapolis, but I did end up in St. Paul.
Where at?
I was in Frogtown.
Okay.
You know Frogtown.
Oh, yeah.
You were up and down University Avenue.
Oh, yeah. I'm a St. Paulite.
Okay.
So it's fun to talk about that, but today's show is about a guy that lives in... El Paso, Wisconsin. That is weird. I'm going to El Paso on my motorcycle. Oh, we'll see you in a couple days.
Right.
Do you have an old junker car in the garage or on the farm? Call Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300. Get the most cash for your old junker vehicle and have it taken away for free. Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300.
The genuine enthusiasm for helping people get fit is palpable at CrossFit Scopos in Dundas. Every coach brings their expertise along with their desire to help you be the best you can be. This is Terry Knight, and I've worked out in a lot of gyms and on my own, but the atmosphere provided at CrossFit Scopos in Dundas is nothing like I've ever experienced. I'm challenged and lifted up. I hope you'll take a moment to check them out and let Scopos help you change your life. Go to CrossFitScopos.com.
Billy, don't be a hero.
Yes, that's correct.
Billy, don't be a hero.
But who's singing?
Somebody Donaldson.
That's correct.
Somebody Donaldson. That's a guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Somebody Donaldson. I can't remember.
Bo
Donaldson?
Yeah.
Another one-hit wonder.
Yeah. And I felt so sorry for every Bill we knew. You'd see him, Billy.
Right.
Where I stood, I saw she was crying. And through her tears, I heard her say, Billy, don't be a hero. Don't be a fool.
22 minutes before 11 o'clock on KYMN Radio, a friend you can count on, 95.1, the one. FM, and of course 1080 AM on your dial. We hope to see you on Friday. By the way, Thursday and Friday show on the Wayne Eddy Affair will be the young ladies that are vying for the scholarship program for the ambassadors of the Northfield Defeat of Jesse James Days. And they go well-traveled and represent our celebration to invite people one-on-one to come to Northfield on the weekend after Labor Day. And so I'll be talking to the young ladies that are vying for that title. Three of them will be ambassadors. And then on Friday, we'll talk to the three ambassadors that are concluding their year. And they'll tell you how fast it went and... They're going to be emotional, I'm sure, when they get on stage a week from this coming Saturday and bad their fell wiggles. It's 21 before 11 on KYMN Radio. And once again, my guest here is John Parks, Executive Director of Good Hue Habitat for Humanity. We talked all about that program for at least 45 minutes. Now we're talking about him as a person. What high school jobs did you have?
Oh.
Besides carrying newspapers
earlier.
Well,
yeah, that got me through junior high. As soon as I was able to drive, there was a local guy that made pizzas, frozen pizzas. And so I learned how to wrap a frozen pizza and then clean the racks. You know, it was a real high-level job.
Guess what? When I was in high school, like my junior year, there was a guy that invented something and was called the Pizza Pup. And he made these trays, and you'd lay the dough inside the tray, and then you would fill it with pizza mix.
Okay.
And then you would put another dough over that.
Okay.
Then you had to cut off the outside, what's left over, put it in an oven, cook it, and then take it out of the oven and put it in a freezer. And then he would sell them frozen.
Wow.
And then this was before microwave ovens. And then you'd
he'd
sell them.
He'd lump in an oven.
Yeah. And he sold them at drive-in places.
Sure.
Independent. You know,
it's like a calzone. Sounds like a calzone.
And if you punctured a hole in one before it got into the cooked part, he would just go nuts.
A big mess, I bet, huh?
You make a mess and you ruin six of them.
Oh.
Because you're, trying to get it. Anyhow, so you and I had a similar job. Yeah.
So from there, then my sister got involved with a guy whose family owned a butcher shop.
Judith.
Judith had a date, actually they were engaged to be married at one point. And his family had this very well-known butcher shop in town.
In Alton.
And so I got the great job of going in and cleaning up after they'd spent the whole day cutting meat. So I'd go in with a steamer and steam all their equipment clean.
That was kind of fun at first, wasn't it?
At first it was fun. Yeah. It probably lasted a week that it was fun. And then, and it was the kind of job where you would learn that you didn't want to miss anything. You wanted to be extremely thorough, because if you missed a machine and 3 days went by before you actually hit the spot that you'd missed, you knew it right away.
By the smell?
Oh, it just would reek.
And, of course, you feared the inspector.
Right, right. You had to do a really thorough job.
So what did you do after that job?
Well, by then I was, that's probably when I graduated. And made the move up to Minnesota and got on the river.
And, of course, the draft thing was not a challenge.
I was right at the tail end of that. When did Nixon leave office? 72, 73, somewhere in there?
Uh-huh. I think 73.
Yeah. So, the draft, the war was winding down, and so I never was subject to the draft, I was fortunate to say.
Never had a number?
I don't even think I had a number. I don't think so.
Where did you live in St. Paul besides Rucktown?
I had some other places in St. Paul. So when I first moved to St. Paul from Minneapolis, I lived right off of Grand Avenue.
I lived on Grand Avenue.
Did you really?
Yeah.
I lived on Lincoln.
Oh, that was a nice neighborhood.
That was a nice neighborhood. We kind of lucked out. We found a fourplex over there where they needed a caretaker. Once again, I couldn't just, be a renter. So it was a little fourplex that needed a caretaker, and I moved in there, and we took care of those units.
Well, there were some mansions in that area.
Yeah, actually, turns out the house right next door to us, Garrison Keillor lived there for a while.
Okay.
After we left. But then next to Garrison Keillor's house was a pastor that we knew. He lived in that house. He ended up selling his house. And I don't know if you know who Butch Thompson is. Butch Thompson was a piano player on the Prairie Home Companion. And Butch Thompson bought that house. So Yeah, there were some really nice. We were living well above our level at that time.
Did you have bicycles?
Yeah, we had bikes.
I mean, you could just coast downtown.
Oh yeah, basically, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, at that time in my life, I was a young father, and there wasn't much coasting. I'll have to say, you know, my boys came when I was 20 years old, and they were twins.
That's too young.
Yeah, it was pretty young.
So, what year were the boys born?
They were born in 76.
Oh, right. You didn't have a whole lot of time to...
Right out of high school in some
ways. And what are their names?
Adam and Aaron.
Adam and Aaron went down to the well. You remember that old inch me and pinch me joke?
I don't think so.
Inch me and pinch me went down to the well. Inch me fell in. Who was left? Pinch me.
Right.
And then you'd pinch the person.
Sure. Nice setup.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The memories you bring back. Adam and?
Aaron.
Aaron. And who's the oldest?
Well, Adam likes to claim that he is.
Okay. Are they identical twins?
They would say no, but if you saw them when they were 9 years old, you would say absolutely they are. Yeah, for a lot of people had a hard time telling them apart.
And what about the mom's name?
My wife?
Yeah.
Janae. Yep.
Janae?
It sounds like that, but actually it's Jannae.
Okay.
Yep.
And you met her?
Love of my life.
In St. Paul?
I actually met her in Minneapolis.
In Minneapolis,
we were both living in Minneapolis at the time.
Okay. And where did you meet her?
Oh, boy. You ready for this?
I am.
Okay. So I was working on the river and spent a lot of time on the river. You work 6 days a week, sometimes seven. So over the course of the summer and the fall, I didn't know hardly anyone in the city. And I had a day off, and I was driving downtown in Minneapolis. Went out to Cedar Avenue. This is like 74 now, so different times. When I got out to Cedar Avenue, I was taking a right-hand turn. I looked to my left, and there was a woman hitchhiking. Well, I just had to know who that woman was, so I went around the block to pick her up. And when I came all the way around the block, she was gone. I thought I'd missed her. Well, as I drove down the street a little further, I see that she had gotten up on the sidewalk and was walking. And I'm driving this little black Volkswagen Bug. Apparently, I look like a safe guy, because when she saw me, she stuck her thumb up. And so I pulled over, and that's how we met. And I took her to a dance class. And
oh, wait a minute. There's a leap from getting in the car hitchhiking to taking her to a...
She was going to a dance class.
Okay, okay.
That was the ride.
That's what you didn't take her like we're going together.
No.
Okay.
So I took her to this dance class, and before she got out of the car, I got her address. We had an amazing conversation in a very short time. So I dropped her off at the dance class. When I went back to finally go visit her, it was a couple weeks later before I had another day off, she had moved. And the person that she'd been living with wouldn't tell me anything about where she'd gone. So I thought, well, that's a lost cause, you know. Should have struck while the iron was hot. And
well, you did.
Well, I did, but it'd been a couple weeks, you know.
Yeah. Oh.
And she was gone, and she wouldn't tell me anything. So I had gone to a movie with my sister-in-law's friend. She'd taken me, you know, taken pity on me. Oh, you want to go do something on Saturday? I said, sure. So we went to a movie in downtown Minneapolis. After the movie, they said, we got to go take a camera back to Dayton's in downtown. So they drugged me along. I didn't have any choice. I was a passenger. So they got into Dayton's, and they knew everybody. These women had been born and raised in Minneapolis, and they knew all these people that worked at Dayton's, and they kept stopping and talking. And every time that would happen, the more isolated and alone I would feel. And I just remember saying to myself, boy, I sure wish I had a friend in Dayton's. And I got out in front of them, and I looked back to see where they were, and Janae was on the escalator, coming down the escalator in Dayton's.
Wow.
Yeah. So
what did you do?
Well, I definitely didn't lose sight of her after that. I took her right at the end of the day. I knew right where she lived in St. Paul. She had moved to St. Paul. And it's
when you saw her on the escalator, Didn't you go up and talk to her?
I broke into song. No, I'm kidding.
No.
No, I definitely. I went and grabbed her, basically. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It was some 40 years ago now.
And she said, "Are you going to ask me out?" And you said, "I'll escalate her."
That's a good one.
Go ahead.
I almost asked too late, you know.
We're going to take another break here on the Wayne Eddy Affair. My guest this morning is John Parker. And, John, I know you're looking at the clock. And you give sermons or something?
No.
Okay. But
no, but I do a lot of public speaking, and so I'm always mindful of how much time. You know, you put a quarter in me, Wayne, and I'll keep going.
Okay. Well, sometimes I have guests that I ask to return and hear the rest of the story.
Ah.
So right now we've got you just out of high school, and you're meeting the love of your life, Janae. And we'll come back and talk some more. We'll be back. In other words, I'm telling you that if we don't catch your whole lifetime, you can always come back.
All right.
Okay? We will be right back. Here we go.
Great family entertainment includes demolition derbies, bull riding, barrel racing, lumberjack shows, Dakota City Heritage Village, and a gigantic midway. There's food, 4-H, and fun all around the fair. New this year, the 7 Keys, 7 Days Grand Prize Giveaway, with your chance to win valuable prizes every day of the fair. Meet your friends at the Dakota County Fair in Farmington, August 6th through the 12th.
Wenzel Heating and Air Conditioning in Eagan is a customer-focused company that employs highly trained people whose goal is to be the best service company in the 13-county metro area. When you deal with Wenzel HVAC, you can expect a positive working environment, practical advice and suggestions, flexible payment options, cutting-edge technology, headache-free maintenance, a dedication to service, and technical excellence. Serving the South Metro, Wenzel HVAC in Eagan. Call 651-894-9898.
Fox Landscaping is known for their creative landscape design and installation. Mike Fox has over 30 years doing design work, brick patios, driveways, and walkways. Call Mike at 645-9091. That's Fox Landscaping of Northfield.
Oh, this is the one I can't believe. Having my baby.
Having my baby.
Having my baby.
What a lovely way of saying how much you love.
But who's singing it?
I think it's Paul Anka.
Hey, yeah.
Having my baby.
His birthday is today.
Oh, no kidding.
Paul Anka. What, yeah, he's 77, I think. You know what his first song was?
No.
I'm so young and you're so old. This, my darling, I've been told. I love you, but you love me. Oh, my baby, can't you see? Oh, Diana.
Oh, really?
You know that song?
I do.
Oh, Diana.
You're the woman.
Well, here, I play this one, and I think about you and Janae, and maybe this played a part in your relationship.
Well, certainly was a change.
I mean, 1974, you graduated. That was number four song of all of 1974. And what year were the twins born, Adam and Aaron?
1976.
Okay. Yep. So there you go. That song was somewhat apropos.
It was.
And so you and Janae, where did you have Adam and Aaron?
At the time... as you can imagine, you know, right out of high school, I didn't have a college education, and I was still trying to find my way. And then the next thing you know, I'm going to be a dad, and then I find out not only that, but there's twins.
Where was Janae from?
She was a Western Minnesota girl. She was raised on a farm in Montevideo, Minnesota.
Okay.
So she had recently moved to the cities as well, and... So we were kind of up against it in the beginning. You know, we didn't have a lot of resources. We didn't know a lot of people in town, and we certainly didn't have a lot of money. So we were kind of scrapping it out there in the beginning. It was a struggle, but we actually lived in a rooming house right off of Lake Street. And once again, we were the caretakers of this 12-unit rooming house. And we had people from all walks of life living, if you can imagine, Lake Street and right around, not far from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
It was a pretty sketchy neighbor. They would call that sketchy these days. Yes. Very sketchy. Yeah. We had a guy that lived in the rooming house with us. He'd applied for a room, and he told me that he was a out of work drug counselor from Detroit, Michigan. And I was so gullible, I just said, oh, sure. And I was looking for work at the time for some additional work, and I saw an ad for a chemical dependency counselor, and I told him about it. Oh, yeah, thanks. I'll have to check that out. Well, about 3 weeks later, we got a visit from the Minneapolis Detective Squad, and they wanted to know if this guy lived in my building. I said, yeah, he's up on the third floor. And they said, well, can we go visit? You know, can we go talk to him? I said, sure. And we went up there, and they sent me to the door. And then, after he wasn't home, thank God he wasn't home, but we found out that he and several others had escaped from prison and shot a guard on the way out in Detroit and had done armed robberies all the way to Minneapolis. And they sent me to the front door. Thanks a lot, guys.
Did they eventually catch a guy?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
I mean, you know, after they'd made that first visit, people in the building knew. He knew people in the building. They told him. He never came back. So I never saw him again. But, yeah, so that's where the boys, that was their first home. And we were there until they were about 6 months old, and that's when we ended up moving to St. Paul.
What hospital?
They were at Hennepin General.
Okay.
Yep.
I thought maybe at that time, I wonder if Anchor Hospital was still on West 7th Street. Or, of course, there was St. Joseph's downtown.
Oh, yeah, all those St. Paul hospitals, downtown. Right.
Yeah. I was born at Miller Hospital.
Okay, St. Paul side.
Yeah. We will be back. Our final break on the Wayne Endy Affair in this absolutely glorious day. It is just beautiful there. This is the 30th day of July. 30 days has September, April, June, and no wonder pink elephants like peanut butter sandwiches.
On September 27th, KYMN will celebrate 50 years of local radio. We're proud of our work here in Northfield, and we want to thank the community for supporting us. On Friday, August 3rd, we'll be blocking off Division Street in downtown Northfield in front of a station between 2nd and 3rd Streets from 5 to 9 p.m. Performances include local favorites Folklorico Dancers, Aztec Dancers, and the Rice County All-Stars. We'll give away thousands of dollars in prizes, some swag, and of course, cake and ice cream, too. Join us for the kickoff of our 50 years of local broadcasting. Event sponsors include the Grand Event Center, the Northfield Area Chamber of Commerce, ServiceMaster by Iatt, and the Northfield Golf Club.
Hi, I'm April Kopak, manager at Three Links Apartments in Northfield. We are an active, independent community of older adults and disabled individuals. Our spacious one-bedroom apartments feature controlled key access, off-street parking, and are handicap accessible. This is a place to call home, make new friends, and participate in many activities and exercises. Tours are welcome. Please call Three Links Apartments at 664-8850 or find out more at threelinks.org.
Hello, everyone. This is your Action News reporter with all the news that is news across the nation on the scene at the supermarket. There seems to have been some disturbance here. Pardon me, sir. Did you see what happened?
Yeah, I did. I was standing over by the tomatoes, and here he comes, running through the pole beam.
Name
through
it.
The fruits and vegetables. Naked the
streak.
As a jaybird. And I hollered over to Ethel. I said, don't look, Ethel. And it's too late. She'd already been in since.
Here he comes.
Boogie-dad, boogie-dad.
There he goes.
Boogie-dad, boogie-dad.
Oh, yes, they call him the streak.
Do you remember who did that?
No.
Ray.
Ray Price?
No.
Nope, that's a blank.
Ray Stevens.
Ray Stevens.
Yeah. Let's see if you know this one here on
okay.
KYMN Radio.
Yeah, I know the song.
Well, name it.
I got to have a word. I got to have a word, Wayne. I got to have a word. One word.
Well, don't fight me for the answer.
Hmm. Oh, is this Kung Fu Fighting? Yeah, Kung Fu Fighting.
And who sang it?
In fact, it was a little bit I don't know.
His name is Carl Douglas.
Yep.
All right, so we might as well finish this hour off with us and see if you can guess him, all right?
You fill up my John Denver.
Yeah.
Yeah. Annie's song.
That's correct.
Yeah, yeah.
We have one more that we're going to do, all
right?
Okay. Like the mountains in springtime. All right, one more, and here we go on the Wayne Eddy Affair, and we got to wrap it up.
Is that the love theme?
This is The Sound of Philadelphia, done by MFSB, Mother, Father, Sister, Brother. Thank you very much for coming in. I'm going to have to.
It's been great.
Pardon me?
It's been great to be here. I really enjoyed the time.
Yeah, my earphones just went out. Okay. Anyhow, I want to thank you very much for being here on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN. We are going to go to another part of our programming. Will you come back?
Well, certainly. I'd love to. I have a lot more to tell you about habitat, and I could sure fill in some blanks that we didn't cover today.
All right. And John Parker's his name, executive director of Goodhue County's Habitat for Humanity, but he lives in El Paso, Wisconsin. This is your radio station. We are the one, KYMN Radio, 95.1 FM, 1080 AM, from downtown Northfield, Minnesota.
It's time for 15 with the Author, hosted by Terry Knight. Join Terry as she opens the cover on a different book each week and talks with the author about their book, their life, and their message. Take a deeper look under the cover with Terry.
The year is 1966. The Vietnam War rages overseas. The Beatles have catapulted into stardom. And 12-year-old Rhode Island native Trudy Mixer is not thrilled with life. Her best friend, Michelle, has decided to become a cheerleader. Everyone at school is now calling her Gertrude, her hated real name. And the gem of her middle school career, the Beatles fan club, has dwindled down to only 3 members, the least popular kids at school. This is 15 with the Author, and my guest today is best-selling author Ann Hood with her latest release, She Loves You, Yeah, 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 a coming-of-age book set in the early 60s. Welcome to the show, Ann.
Thanks for having me.
So this is not your usual genre. What was it like for you to write a coming-of-age novel?
It was wonderful and so much fun. You know, Trudy is based ever so loosely on me and myself as that child, you know, that Beatle-loving child. And so it was so fun to sort of unlock those memories and relive my own Beatlemania. And, you know, I really think it's a book that mothers and grandmothers of young readers will love if they too have a special place in their heart for the Beatles.
Yeah, my sister is a huge fan of the Beatles, and she was devastated when my mom got rid of all her albums when we moved. I know.
Oh. Even unforgivable. I hope they've been able to make up.
Yeah, no, it was rocky. Even the White Album. I know.
This is terrible.
I know.
And they are treasures.
Oh, absolutely. My sister has stuff up in her townhouse with Beatles memorabilia and stuff. So it's pretty cool. But, you know, that's one thing. The Beatles have never gone away.
Mm-mm, no, they haven't. You know, for me, and I guess people around my age, I feel like they came into my life at the perfect time. I was only 7 years old, and it was so safe to have a crush on Paul McCartney. He was so sweet, you know, looking, and he was called the cute Beatle.
Yeah.
And their songs were still talking about, I Want to Hold Your Hand. I saw her standing there, you know, across the room. Like, it still seemed very safe. But as I got older, they changed their looks and their songs got more risky and more complex, and that suited me too. So I think I was so lucky that I grew up with them. And then of course, when I had my own kids, I introduced them to the Beatles. So I feel like the Beatles held my hand my whole life.
Yeah. And there's so much about friendship in the book, and so much about, I love also that each chapter is titled after a Beatles tune.
That was really fun to do. I did it, I landed on that about halfway through, and one of the chapters just seemed to scream for a Beatles song title, and then I thought, let's see if I can do them all. So I made a list of my favorite songs. You can imagine it was quite a long list.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite things to do is when I ended each chapter to